From the Farm Credit Studios, this is On the Farm Radio. Rural and agricultural news coming up next.
And we're back looking at another lopsided matchup, Jim. Today we have a combine taking on a train.
Yeah, that heavy train is about 1,000 times heavier than the combine. No competition there.
Right, especially given that it'll take at least a mile to stop that train.
That's 18 football fields.
It's no contest. Every day, people are injured or killed trying to beat a train at rail crossings. See tracks, think train.
This message brought to you by Operation Lifesaver.
You're listening to On the Farm Radio with Jeff Ishii.
We have a big holiday coming up next weekend, the 4th of July, America's 250th birthday. It is a big deal. Now, when most people think of American history, they think of George Washington, founding father. But you might not know that a lot of people knew George Washington as the cherry grower.
America, a nation, a society whose roots run deep in agriculture. The founding fathers, agrarians, including the father of our country.
He wrote the names of several cultivars that he had worked with at his home in Mount Vernon.
Whether or not George Washington cut down his father's cherry tree remains lore. Yet his planting and growing of several varieties of cherries is fact. And a recent discovery during renovations at Mount Vernon provides a narrative full of American history, innovation, and perhaps future opportunity. I'm Rod Bain. USDA plant geneticist Ben Gutierrez joins us to tell us a George Washington cherry tale that's no lie in this edition of Agriculture USA. The United States of America at its birth 250 years ago was fledgling in so many ways. One was in the realm of agriculture.
Fruit was a major part of colonial culture, and really a signal of land ownership was to plant an orchard. You planted trees as a sign that you were here to stay, you were going to establish a homestead. And so really the very different economies and how we kind of view things today.
Ben Gutierrez is the tart cherry curator at USDA's Plant Genetic Resource Unit in Geneva, New York. Yes, his study of cherry genetics goes back to the time of George Washington.
He was an avid agricultural experimenter, so he did a lot for figuring out drainage and rotation for his home at Mount Vernon. He also planted a lot of cherries, and he wrote about these cherries. They're new to the area of American horticulture. It's kind of in its infant stage, and so figuring out what works, what cultivates, what can we bring right out of Europe and work with there. So experimenting with tart cherries, sweet cherries, kind of just exploring what the possibilities are.
And in the case of the nation's first president, he documented three or four varieties grown at his estate in Mount Vernon, Virginia, cultivars that he named.
These are ones that are documented throughout Europe as well. Some of the material that we know that Washington had worked with were named cultivars that at that time were already a few hundred years old. Yellow Spanish is a cherry that's mentioned in colonial America that dates back to the early 1600s. And so once you find something that worked, you kind of pass it on. So modern breeding didn't begin until maybe the mid-1900s, especially for cherry, which is still pretty young in terms of what's been bred, what's been done to control and directly improve through cross-pollination in the breeding world.
Washington was not unusual, however, in sharing his ag experiments and breeding of new crop cultivars in a colonial form of extension.
Thomas Jefferson was just a little bit south of Washington. George Mason, all these founding fathers were sharing fruit and sharing what their successes were in agriculture. And so we actually know of some of the records from George Washington says he got his cherries from George Mason. Kind of this partnership, this enthusiasm for trading, things that were working, kind of this willingness to collaborate among early Americans. So such a beautiful time period and kind of how we're starting to piece together our early American horticultural practices.
A unique record of Washington's efforts, however, was discovered in 2024. A renovation of Mount Vernon unearthed two bottles of well-preserved cherries.
We do know it was a tart cherry, so some of the pits kind of indicate that it's this species. We got down into the genetic information that we could retrieve, and it does match better to the tart cherry signature.
Now, Gutierrez notes the significance of the discovery historically, but with 250-year-old-plus genetic material preserved and documented, there is also future potential.
The tart cherry cultivation isn't that broad in the United States currently. It's more of a processing or a juicing cherry. Grandma's pies, right, are full of tart cherries. But if you look at tart cherry consumption, Europe versus United States today, tart cherries are much more broadly consumed internationally. So maybe this is a chance for we can expand our markets and explore how to bring in new crops and new flavors into American horticulture.
And as a fellow cherry aficionado, Gutierrez admires George Washington's pioneering spirit. As a founder of the United States of America, a patriot and president, and particularly as a grower.
I do love that mindset of like, let's have that broad genetic base so that we can always have that kind of infusion into markets of flavor, of quality, of things that you grow easily.
This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
You are listening to On the Farm Radio with Jeff Ishii.
Well, when grilling out in the summertime, most American consumers go with beef, but chicken and pork are catching up. That's according to Bernd Nelson with American Farm Bureau.
These record high prices from historically tight cattle supplies is continuing to bring challenges for both consumers and farmers and ranchers. Pork is offering some relative value and price stability that's being supported by better production, more efficient production from our hog farmers. Chicken stands out as the most accessible protein option.
So with the 4th of July holiday coming up, Nelson says,
retailers and grocery stores generally increase sales and specials as holidays get closer. And this can be a really good way to save money. And for all those pitmasters that are looking to stock up on their favorite cuts, this also offers a great opportunity to get ahead of cookouts later in the summer.
Economist Bernd Nelson with the American Farm Bureau Federation.
Stay tuned. Your daily pearl of wisdom is coming up next.
Just one bite from a tick can lead to serious illness, so it's important to properly prepare for any outdoor activity. Like Bob here.
Hi.
Bob has applied an insect repellent designed for ticks.
Sure.
He's wearing long sleeves to keep ticks off his skin, and to help him see the ticks better, he's wearing long, bright white pants tucked into his socks.
Yeah, I'm wearing shorts. Those are my legs.
Really? Oh, wow. Okay, learn more about preventing tick-borne diseases from your local health department.
Today we send out a big old salute to two of our affiliated radio stations, the first being in Sparta, Tennessee, WSPR, Sparta Country Online in beautiful Sparta, Tennessee, the second station in Alma, Georgia, WAJQ, FM 104.3. Big old salute to all of our listeners in Tennessee and Georgia. Our pearl of wisdom today is from comic Stephen Wright, who once said that half the people you know are below average. That's your pearl of wisdom. You're on the farm, and I'm Ish.